Leslie, welcome to our podcast of Fabulous Women Who Launch. So thanks for talking with us today.
Well, I'm so delighted to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
I know. Yeah. Well, Leslie and I met in the late 90s, actually, when your PR firm was representing a company that I founded back in the internet boom. And we lost touch until social media brought you back into my radar a few years ago. And I've just been fascinated by your inquisitive questioning around leadership and what makes a good leader. And with everything we're facing in this upcoming election and everything around the election too, and in everything that we're following, what better time than now to explore leadership a bit, and in my mind, also followers, which we talked a little bit about last week, we're gonna touch on. So, but a little background, Leslie Grossman's personal vision is to create more collaborative leaders in the world. And you're the director, faculty director for the Women's Leadership Program at the George Washington University Center for Excellence in Public Leadership. You're also a senior fellow and executive coach leading programs on executive presence, building trusted relationships, the 7 habits of highly effective women, which, by the way, I was a huge proponent of the 7 habits of highly effective men and took his courses 25 years ago. He had a 3-day course. Did you happen to take it?
I didn't, but not at all, but read the book many times.
There you go. And step up to the mic. So thanks for being here today, especially because I know your time right now is as valuable as everybody else's. So thanks.
My pleasure. I'm delighted to have this conversation.
Yes. So of course, having followed your writings on leadership and how to develop as a reader, you've always positioned yourself, I think, you've never said it, but to me, I've watched your TED Talk and other things that you've done. It always seemed you were starting with the premise that the leaders you're coaching come from a position of wanting to lead in a positive, common good, goal-oriented position. And you teach people with good intentions how to lead, and that's admirable. Is that right?
Yes and no. Okay. I think that people that I work with are drawn to me because that's a place that I come from when they read about who I am, that's where I come from. But that being said, the one thing that they all do, and that I, if they're not ready to do it, I guide them, is I guide them to have a vision in the world, a vision for their organization. But to have a place that you want to go, that you want to bring everyone. So it's about having a vision. And because I also work with a lot of women leaders, which is in my heart.
Which is why you're here with us, because
that's right, that's right.
Women. Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
It is that I realized from a lot of the research that I've read, other people's research, that often women don't identify what their vision is. And therefore, how can they not, that's why they don't get there, because they haven't really thought about it or put it on a piece of paper and said, I'm working toward this. Anyway, okay. So it's about vision, I think, for me personally.
Okay, so I guess because my curious nature has been watching the leaders of our world lately, most of whom are men, and still in the leadership in this country and other countries, it's certainly predominantly men. So what I've come to, I want to get right into this question because it's so paramount for where we are right now. So as you're telling me, okay, have clarity around your vision, clarity of where you want to take people, clarity with what you want to be presenting to them so that they have clarity. Okay. Is there ever a moment when you have to make a list of who you want your followers to be and what do they need to have as their assets to be a follower, to be of value to you and your vision?
It's a great question, Chris, and a question that I don't think too many people have ever asked, quite frankly.
Well, good that I'm, right here. Okay, so what's the answer?
I don't think leaders often think about their followers, except what they should be like, rather that they should just follow them. And so I think that that's often the place that they come from. But it was such an interesting question that you brought up that, I all of a sudden I'm seeing things everywhere about followers.
Yeah. Oh, you are? I have not found out. Okay.
I mean, so it shows you, you're on the leading edge always. You were back in the internet days, you are again.
Well, here you go. Okay, but let's just explore that a little bit. Let me give you an example. I started a blog in 2006, I think, called Frisia Lane. It's still there. And At one point, because I'm in marketing and I knew how to do it, I had close to 500,000 subscribers, all women across the country. And I blogged about everything, but not in a serious way. Like I didn't blog about politics other than maybe a global something or other, but nothing that touched on anybody's, you know, Achilles heel or anything. Okay. Now, I have in the last year and a half or 2 years decided that I can't live with myself if I don't speak to my own political beliefs right now. I've lost, I think, 65% of my followers. Mm-hmm. Now, interestingly enough, they were mostly from the Midwest because I was writing about, you know, issues. I went to college at the University of Nebraska. You know, I was writing about television shows and books that I was reading and being a mom and just all kinds of other things. But it was very, you know, the common denominator was very much based on nothing where you took a side.
Right, right, right. You were kind of neutral.
So I then, based on some things that I read that you had done about a year and a half ago and something I saw in your TED Talk, I thought, okay, what is my vision? And I realized back then my vision was just to be a writer and to write elegantly and creatively, engaging, entertaining, and educationally, but nothing. And now my vision is to make sure that I have left no stone unturned in trying to make sure that people see a point of view that I think is, you know, undeniable. Mm-hmm. Okay. I never thought about who my followers were till I started losing them in great things. And I decided about 6 months ago, I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
And so now that I'm assessing my followers, it's almost like, you know what? You don't have to follow me anymore. Okay. So if you were to take this leadership group that you have counseled for 20 years, and you now said, okay, I'm going to do a program for all of you people to come back because now we need to establish how to determine what kind of follower you want. Mm-hmm. And what is the goal of the follower? And then really is the leader, you know, what's the leader's position in that? Would you be able to do that? And is there something you could set up that would help people determine who do I want to follow me?
Well, I think, yes, you could, but it is going to, from the research that I've done most recently, is that followers, in fact, the reason you lost your followers, some of them, not all of them.
Maybe they all go in quiet peace.
Yeah. I mean, is because in fact, when you look at leadership styles, followers follow those who match their style, their personality style. And if the leader suddenly starts talking about things or leading them in a direction that is not simpatico with them, they will abandon that leader and go to someone else who matches their style. That's what I've seen from the research that I've been doing. And that I have to bring up, and this is a political book, so I'm going to bring it up, but this is what I happened to just sit in and listen to a podcast yesterday, and it was a John Dean, who co-wrote a book with a psychologist, Bob Altemeyer, and it is called, okay, are we ready? Authoritarian Nightmare.
Okay, but we have to go back and reintroduce John Dean, who is off many people's radar at this point.
Yeah, he was the chief counsel to Nixon.
Well, there was that. Okay. So John Dean was not somebody who's had a clear trajectory toward let's follow him and listen to what he has to say. I was surprised when you told me yesterday that you were on that meeting that they were doing. Now, did that enter into it? I mean, what's his mission?
Now, his mission, really, what I got from listening to the podcast, and I have not read the book yet, but I thought what was interesting about it is how he talked about how followers match up with their leader in personality type. And his example was, he wrote about President Trump and his style of leadership. But more than that, he was talking about the followers. And that was kind of like the flag that said, oh, the people that follow a particular leader match up with their style. And so that made me think about, they've got proof. I mean, they did all kinds of studies and all that back up this book. And it was about what's going on now. However, for me, it was a deeper issue in terms of followers and saying, oh, the reason I follow this person when I'm a follower is because I believe in their style, the way they go about leading. And so I think that's an interesting thing to consider, that perhaps that's how followers match up with leaders.
Interesting. Well, it's funny because in my marketing company, I say two things very clearly, that what you want to do is you want to provide a mirror to the other person as well as a window into that which they aspire to be. If you're pitching to me and I can't see myself in you, then I can't connect to you. So I think that it's funny because in marketing, it's the same exact thing as now you're saying it is in leadership. Now, you started writing a piece, I guess, quite a while ago, and I had to laugh, and I'm going to get you into that right now because I think it's important. It just came out yesterday, but I know you've been working on it a while, about the Emperor's New Clothes and the Pied Piper. But before we get started on that, I wrote a piece on the Emperor's New Clothes a month and a half ago.
Oh, really?
And my piece basically said people are comparing Trump to the emperor and the emperor's new clothes. And I'd say he's not the emperor. You know, he's the sowers, the people he paid a lot of money to, yeah. And they created this pretend clothes. So I don't see him as the emperor. I see him as the tailors that took advantage of everybody. And I see the emperor as many people in America who are so disenfranchised that they took to follow this person because there was no one else to lead them out, you know? So, but go through the premise of both those two things that you talked about yesterday. It was fascinating.
Yeah, well, I would agree with you on the emperor. I mean, I actually think he's both. I think he's both okay. The emperor and the weavers in that case, because, you know, he believes the feedback that he hears from his followers who keep pushing him forward. His cabinet, for instance, who never told the emperor that there was nothing he was wearing.
Yeah, and I hadn't thought of that. Yeah.
You know, and his cabinet basically reinforces what they want, what the emperor believe, wants others to believe.
You think he believes what he said? You think that he does not sit there every day saying, you know, I'm scamming these people?
No, I don't think so. I really don't.
So you think he is a real leader?
I think he is an autocratic leader that wants to run the world.
Okay.
And that he doesn't have any of the other qualities that good leaders have. I mean, you can look at leaders and say, well, are they a good leader? Are they a bad leader? What qualities does a good leader have?
Are you a good witch or a bad witch?
Yeah, exactly. I think that he really believes that anything that comes out of his mouth, and that's the narcissism also part of it, anything that comes out of his mouth is, it's not about whether it's good for people, because he doesn't really care if it's good for people. It's about himself. It's all about himself. And so I think that's why I think he's kind of both the emperor and the weavers together, mixed up in that story. And
but you talk about how the Pied Piper first led the rats to the river, and then he went and got the children and led them too. And I couldn't help but think, okay, so we have two sets of followers. We've got rats, and we've got children.
Yeah.
Okay, what's the common denominator that made them both able to be led? In other words, when we think of, you know, putting together a following, and again, we're not going to totally make this about politics, but both you and I feel strongly, and I guess, you know, at some point we have to speak our minds sometimes. But also, if you look at it from a bigger perspective of those who want to be a leader and are looking at the leadership styles of these people coming out, look at the leadership style two nights ago at the debate. You know, his leadership style is to shut you down.
Right, right.
Biden's leadership style is to empathize and show everyone a mirror that he knows your lot in life, no matter whether you're wealthy or you're poor or whoever you are. Those are very different leadership styles.
Direct opposites.
Yeah, but it is a style. Yeah. Now, one of the things you mostly teach women, or that's what it appears on everything that I see of your work, and certainly I felt the TED Talk was more female-based than male-based, but if that's true, right, then what kind of follower, you know, I think Biden does look for who's following him. I'm going to appeal to the socioeconomic class that is struggling and works in the unions and everything else, and I'm going to appeal to them this way. I think he's thought through. That's one of my following groups. Okay, I haven't been able to ascertain what Trump's common demographic is unless it's people who are very angry with what they don't have. Anybody who doesn't have what they want, that's his following. I mean, Have you been able to define his group of followers?
I mean, when I look at it, I look at it at people that probably think a lot like he does. They want to run things. They want to be in charge. They don't want other people telling them what to do. And you can see that in the behaviors that come out, just like him. They are themselves living a personal life where they're in charge of the family. I see it more of the old style, paternalistic type of people. And maybe even the women that follow him want to be back the way it was. They want to be led by one person who just tells them what to do, that they trust. They'll trust whatever he says, it's okay. I just will follow that one. And I think those are the kinds of people that are following him. They're also, when you look at the evangelists and that type of thing, they also are followers of one person that gets up and says, this is the way you do it. Don't question me. I know what.
Or the Catholic Church, by the way, very driven by, you know, there's a tight hold on everybody underneath the top of the Catholic
right.
Church.
That's yeah. right. Exactly. So I kind of see that those are his followers. The people that may follow Biden that he's looking for are those that you pointed out. But in addition, there are people that care about people. They're empathetic people. They themselves may be taken care of just fine, but they're concerned about the world. They're concerned about their family. They're concerned about the next generation. They're not just about themselves. They are very focused on how do we make the world a better place, climate change, all those things.
Right.
Those are the people that I see that are tend to be more of the Biden followers.
Okay, but if I look at the two leaders, so we're taking Biden as a leader now and Trump. Okay, so A, would you say they're both leaders?
Yes, they're leaders.
Well, but Biden has never been a leader. Biden was the number two, a great number
right,
two.
Right.
He never led the Senate in anything. He never led great legislation in the Senate. What he did was he was always able to work with the leaders in the Senate to make legislation happen.
Yeah.
Okay, when Obama gave him a task, he was great at pulling together a team and making it happen. He was never at the top of that totem pole.
Not the top, but see, if you look at different styles of leadership,
okay,
there is the collaborative leader. That's what Biden was. He knew how to collaborate. They always hear about how he went across the aisle, right? And got Republicans to vote on things that he would. So he was a collaborative style of leader.
So you'll give him the title of leader.
Absolutely.
Whereas I was questioning that today. I'm glad to hear that. Okay, so then what kind of leader is Trump? Is he a fear-based leader, or does he, you know, Jim Jones, how many people drank that Kool-Aid? I don't know, a lot.
Right, that's right.
Okay, not only that, what I couldn't understand in the moment was, here's this leader who stands up and says, we're all going to die, but I don't see him die first to show me that it's okay to die. He was the last to go. Okay, and people watched people dying and they died anyway. Was that a leader, or by that point, did those people have no brains because they had watched the equivalent of Fox News for years?
Good.
Okay, I'm slipping that in, and I'm not asking you to justify it, but I get to put that there.
Yeah, I think that what happens is anybody that has a base of followers, in fact, could be considered a leader. Now, whether you consider them a good leader or not is a whole other thing, right? But he had embraced them for so long that as an autocratic leader, right, that people that were looking for somebody to tell them what to do, what to be, that by the time they drank the Kool-Aid, they just whatever he said they would do. But it was a process.
But you said just now that Trump's following are people who want to be leaders and want to be in charge and want to be successful.
Well, so I didn't say successful. I mean, they want to be in charge of their own family. They're not looking to be like Trump, you see. They just want to be in their home. It's like, children, listen to me. I know everything. You know nothing. I mean, it starts in the home. Yeah. It starts in the business. It's the business people. They want to be 100% in charge and that nobody knows more than them. They kind of duplicate a lot of his style, but in their own little universe. And that's why they're comfortable following him. And they want someone like that because they mirror that. They mirror it in their own little universe.
Now, can you be a good leader without truth?
Mm, I don't think you can be a good leader. No. And everyone's, unfortunately, everyone's perception of what the truth is very different, right?
Yeah, you think your own truth now.
I mean, it's changed a lot. There used to be, you could really know what truth was. But now it seems very confusing to people. But I
think... All right, well, we're all being asked to follow people now. Yeah. And not only that, we're being asked to follow people even though we've been betrayed by the people we've been following for decades.
Yes.
I mean, on both sides of the aisle. Don't even get me started on Schumer. Okay, what do I need? What asset makes me a good follower? Is it due diligence? Is it, tell me what, do I need to know what my goals are to know who to follow? And give me a few things that I can do, Leslie, to make sure that right now, when we have to follow people, all of us cannot run this country. We have to make choices in November 3rd, not just at the top of the ticket. Tell me what I need to know about myself to make sure that I'm choosing well for who I'm going to follow.
Let's start with, yes, we need to each have our own vision for what's important to us. What is our vision for our family, our country, our community? Do we have a vision for that? That's the first thing. And if we don't, think about it. Then we need to listen. We truly need to listen with an open mind, and we need to pause, not be so quick to say I'm with this one or that one. We need to really look, listen, and read and understand. Listen to understand, not to confirm our own beliefs. That's a really hard thing for people to do. But listen.
Well, it goes with the adage that I love to say, you know, I try to seek to understand rather than to be understood. You know, it's the same kind of premise. Okay, but that also calls for me to assess whether that person is speaking the words I want to hear because he wants my group to follow him or her. Or my concern is I can do everything you've just laid out. Here's the part where I can't figure out and I need your help. And that is, how do I ascertain whether that leader, in quotes, is actually going to do what they say? What do I look for to say, yes, he aligns or she aligns themselves with my point of view? Because a lot of people are aligning themselves with my point of view. How do I choose which one I think is actually going to execute that out?
The only thing we have to go on in looking at the future is looking at what that person's actions have been. What actions have that person taken that relate to where they want to take us? And knowing that people are human, right? People make mistakes and people do change along the way because hopefully good leaders learn, you know, like people that I work with, they may not be that empathetic at one point, but then they suddenly realize, oh my God, I haven't been thinking about how hard it is for my employees to be working from home and all the stresses they have. I need to think about that. So leaders can change also, but we have to look at the recent past, let's say, the fairly recent past, don't go back so far, and see what is the recurring theme. What is that recurring theme? And then at some point we have to trust that what they're saying is what they really mean and that where they're going to take us.
You're so knowledgeable about leaders. Now I do think we need to delve into the other side or we're not going to.
I read a lot about leadership. I read everything I can. And I guess I take in whatever it is that I think is applicable, especially to women, because that's really where I want to make the difference. I mean, we have to bring men and women together in order to make this work, but it's about creating more women leaders so that we have equity at the top of every organization.
Okay, you've just made this compelling statement where I'm all in. Trust me, you had me at hello when it comes to I care about women leaders, especially when you look at the success leaders who are women are having now, even in COVID, the leaders that are women and globally are doing much better than men. Okay, is there a difference, Leslie, in leadership for genders?
There shouldn't be, I think. There is in many cases. You do see some male leaders that have many of the leadership traits of strong, successful women leaders. But I would say, generally speaking, if you were to divide it in half today, they look different for the most part. And I think we need to bring that model together so that there is that the traits of the great leader come from both things that were often considered feminine traits, like empathy, right? That more male leaders need that. Some have it, but there is a difference, but we need to bring it together. And I think that's when we have the best leadership.
Okay, I'm gonna put a couple words out. I work with a life coach, and she wanted me to put together my core values. And I went all over the internet looking at core values, and I'm like, okay, I just can't do this touchy-feely wonderfulness. Like, what if my core value is ruthless? Like, what if, I mean, ruthless isn't on the list of core values. Hello. So I thought, what if it's fair and ruthless? Like, you can be fair and ruthless, you know, ruthlessly pursuing what you think is fair. Yeah. Ruthless takes on a different meaning that is not so negative, but ruthless is also a male trait, not a female trait. Right. So when you say that there is a difference in gender, are things like core values and words that we use that have a male connotation versus female, does that affect the leadership success portion?
That's a good question. I think it depends the context of it. Just like you said, the word ruthless on its own.
I saw your face. Yeah. I said ruthless and you were like, what? Who am I talking to?
Yeah, ruthless, if ruthless means passionate, if it means you're focused, right? Focused, ruthlessly pursuing.
Ruthless, I looked it up. Ruthless means pursuing an end without any sense of deviating from the end result. You're ruthlessly going to do something.
Okay, well, to me, that's really about focus, which is a very important leadership trait.
Interesting.
Yeah, and so I guess it's just the word versus, you know, another. And being a focused leader where you are ruthlessly pursuing.
Well, maybe we need to send you a list. I may do this for a blog or something. I need to send you a list of adjectives, 100 adjectives, and you need to determine whether they need to be redefined so they're not negative toward a female approach to leadership.
Mm.
Because I want to be ruthless. I want to know when I should be and when I shouldn't.
Right, right. Very good.
Yeah. So maybe we're going to have to send you that list and see what happens.
Okay. That would be
okay. All right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
So what do you think would be 3 good personality traits for a follower to have?
Good question. I would say that they are 3 personality traits would be someone who listens and is not quick to respond, not an angry person, but someone who is calm and willing to listen and hear, someone who can have a conversation with you and you know that you're talking, that it's really a conversation, that they're not somebody that has to be right all the time, somebody who their personality has allowed them to change their mind. And they are listening to others and they do change their mind from time to time.
Right.
So I think that those are all personality types. And someone who looks to positiveness, you know, that is a hopeful person and is willing to change themselves.
Well, I see that as a leader, but as a follower.
Even a follower, I think. A follower is someone who hasn't been locked into being the same person all the time.
Interesting, yeah, a good follower. You know, yeah.
A good follower is someone who has evolved, you know, as a human being or as a leader in their own community or in their own family.
Right.
That they...
All right, now once I've chosen my leader, okay, once I've chosen my leader, what responsibility do I then have to, you know, look, if you work at my company, Blue Shoe Strategy, you know, we do assessments all the time, you know, how are you feeling about work and how is work feeling about you and whatever. Okay. What is my job as a follower to oversee my leader? In other words, what's my responsibility and how do I execute it?
Right. Your responsibility as a follower is to reach out to your leader and actually be willing to speak up to the leader, even when you don't agree. but do it with an open mind and in a way that they will hear you. So I think that it is our responsibility of followers to not just follow blindly, but to speak up.
You know, it's so funny you say that because, you know, as you know, I worked on the Obama campaign extensively. And when I look back at Obama, we all followed him blindly. Okay, he's, you know, or at least we all, my in my crowd. Okay, so he's picked in 2008, he becomes president, and we really never hear from him again. In terms of, he was a great orator and gave great speeches, but he never called on his followers to do anything for him after the initial, please vote for me and give me small amounts of money, which we worked on the internet. And I realized looking back that some of the ways he never made progress, and let's take guns as an example, you know, he did more to set guns back than Bush. I mean, Bush did more for gun reform than Barack Obama did.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. He never asked his followers, of which it was a majority of Americans, to step forward and do something. And when I look back, and also when you look at the Garland hearings, he could have gone, you know, a year before the election when Garland was swept under the rug, and frankly, I didn't notice it because my people were in charge and they're my leaders and I didn't worry about that, you know, okay. He could have come out and said, look, you have to fix this because we can't allow the Senate that's controlled by somebody who doesn't want to get anything done at all. We can't allow this. So you're going to have to join me and we're going to have to take action, followers. And here's the action. So if you think about it, he was a great orator and a great speaker, and he made you feel, not to be confused with reality, as if everything was fine because he was in charge of it. But the truth is, he never called on his following to back up the things he wanted or needed to get done. At least right. I can't recall anything. Okay, is that the follower's fault, or is that his fault, or is it both of our faults? And if the follower had done that, you know, in other words, what do you see if we look at that? If we look at his, you know, and we should be looking on both sides of the aisle.
Yeah.
If we look at his presidency and where it ended up, there was also 40% of my country that was falling, you know, after Reagan got rid of the middle class, they were falling into abject poverty with none of the benefits that some of the minority groups were getting because we didn't know they were a minority group that needed it. And we're sitting, you know, and so all those people became disenfranchised and we didn't even know. All right, who is that, the followers or is that the leaders? Like, who's responsible for the outcome that got us to this moment?
Both. Because as followers, we have to be willing to speak up. And that's the, and when I do work with women, this is one of the things that holds women back also. They don't speak up.
No, they don't.
That's right. So all of us need to say our responsibility as a follower of a leader in a company, in a leader in your government, whatever community you are in, as a follower, you need to step up and speak up and say how you feel and make suggestions and say, I'm willing to do something.
So now, our obligation is not just to follow. Our obligation is also to participate in whatever the vision and goal is, in a way that makes sure that our voice is not overridden by Jim Jones.
Exactly. I mean, that, and I, there's instances I have of the White House actually under Obama where the women were not being called on in the meetings and they had to speak up to him about it and say, the women aren't being called on here.
Are you talking about press conferences or what?
No,
are you talking about?
No, it was actually like in a, you know, cabinet meeting, something like that, or a staff meeting. And so the women, that's a great example of how women have to also not only speak up for themselves, but you know how women, and I have to bring up women because that's what I care about.
I know, me too.
You know, if you've ever sat at a boardroom meeting and you're the only woman there and everybody, and you bring up an idea and then and nobody like says anything, and then 2 minutes later a man brings it up, right? And everybody says, oh, that's a great idea.
Well, I can take it a step further. I was one of the few women at P. Mark Mitchell in the late 70s. And I was finally invited into the boardroom, the only woman in the boardroom, by the way. This was a couple weeks after my boss had told me I couldn't go to lunch with any of the men partners alone. I should always go with more than one because it didn't look right. And I said, but business is done over lunch. And what am I supposed to, it's, I can't, and he's like, you can't do lunch. Okay. I'm in the boardroom. It's all men. And my father was at Ford Motor Company, one of the top guys, president of commercial industrial financing. And he worked in what they was called the glass house in Dearborn, Michigan. And I was his daughter. And to me, that was like God's, it was like Oz, you know, it was a big deal. So here I am, I'm going to my first boardroom meeting at Pete Warwick. The managing partner asked me to sit next to him. I sit next to him. He puts a question on the table and he goes around the opposite way in, on the table. And as the men are answering their ideas about this question, I'm thinking to myself, first of all, I'm feeling like I'm at my dad's glass building. You know, I'm in the room where all I saw were female secretaries. I never saw a mirror of myself there. So I'm already sitting there going, what the hell's going on? And then I'm thinking, these are the dumbest answers I ever heard. They really are. Like, the answer's so clear, I don't understand. And then I thought, well, you can't say that because clearly you don't understand. Like, you're missing something. But by the time it got to me, I don't know where, I found the resources to give my opinion. And my boss, who was across the table, looked across the table at me, and there was such hatred in his eyes and such anger and fury. And I realized that I had given him a lot of ideas that he probably had brought to this table and used them as his own. And there's dead silence, and the managing partner goes, okay, I think we've had enough input, we're moving on. And of course, the input that he took and acted on was mine. Yeah. And I realized in that moment, it's a long story, I'm sorry for that. I realized in that moment that in the future, I would not be at the table again if I continued to behave this way. So what I would do, I don't know where I came up with this, Leslie, we're talking about 1979. What I would do is when it got to my turn to say something, I'd say, you know, Jim, do you remember when we were talking a couple weeks ago? And he'd look at me like, what's she talking about? And right. I'd go, you said something that's relevant here. And I would make it up.
Right.
And Jim would sit there. And I swear to God, Leslie, I think Jim would, in his mind, thought he had come up with this great idea, which I would then lay on the table and they would do. And I moved up, you know, but I knew that I couldn't move up walking into the room unless I was on the arm of a man.
Yeah. Yeah.
So our voices, well, we've gotten better. Yeah. You know, I do a lot of public speaking, and when I get to Q&A at the end, inevitably a woman will raise her hand and say, and this might be a dumb question, but, or, well, yeah. You know what, forgive me if you already addressed this and I didn't fit, you know, and I'll stop, I'll say, wait, you have to stop right now and you have to start over again, because I can't hear your question when you begin it diminishing your own voice. So why don't you ask, and they sort of look at you. But I don't care, you know. So I think what you're saying is, we have never been first to the table. We've never had the power. We've walked in every major room on the arm of a man. Eleanor Roosevelt on the arm of a man. I think that's why Ruth Bader Ginsburg was so very large to us. You know, she walked in the room herself. You know,
she did. Now, I mean, fortunately, Chris, we've come a ways from what you experienced back there, where you had to use that kind
not
of
that
technique.
Far.
We still have to.
We still do it.
We still have to use techniques, which is what I teach in my executive women's leadership program. And we have to support each other, you know, so when, and that actually did happen in the Oval Office or in the Cabinet Office or whatever, because it's written about a lot. But it really was women bringing to the attention, because actually Obama did really want to hear what the women had to say. But it's just a habit. It's a habit that goes on. So going back to what we talked about, which is speaking up, we, whether you're a woman or a man, and you're a follower, or you work for someone or whatever, you have to use your voice. And if people don't listen to you, you have to find another person to partner with you to make sure that your voice that shares your opinion or shares what you feel. And together, either as an independent or a group, we're all members of groups, right? Yeah. And it, groups can make a difference. Well, going back to Ruth Bader Ginsburg, the ACLU, right? I mean, you start as one voice and then you really bring that voice to a chorus of voices and get
And maybe what you just said about Ruth is so critical here too, because one of the things she kept saying is, as she was thwarted, top of her law school class, she can't get a job. You know, she just kept saying, I just have to keep going through whatever doorways are available. So if what you're saying to me is, as a follower in politics now, because I'm never going to run for political office. And so as a follower, even if my voice isn't heard by a Chuck Schumer, I have to keep speaking it and hope that it does, in essence, in the end. I mean, you can't expect to go from volume zero to 100. You just have to keep doing it in whatever way or sphere of influence you have. Is that what you're saying?
That's right. And look for others that share your views. I mean, it's like, as a leader, and I personally believe that we followers of people, we are all leaders too.
Yeah.
Or we can become a leader. Because if we believe in something, we need to get other people who share our views together, and then they become our followers. And then our voice perhaps will be heard, because we put a group together and we're leading our own group that is a voice to those that are leaders above us.
Okay.
So that's what unions were all about, right? And other kinds of organizations.
Right.
I mean,
good example. Yeah.
Yeah. So we have to kind of go back and say, well, maybe I do have a voice. I'm not being heard. What can I do to be heard? What other things can I be doing? Who else shares my views?
Well, on another podcast, when we have more time, I think what we're going to have to address with you is the unions really fell from grace when the leaders of the union became corrupt.
Right.
Okay. All right. We're now sitting in a country, in my opinion, where many of the leaders in our country are corrupt on both sides of the aisle. I don't think it's one side. Okay. So we need to talk about, is that a personality trait they had? In other words, were they never really honorable leaders to begin with? Or is that a turn they, another day, another time, but it's an interesting question,
It's an interesting question.
But now I want to play a little game.
Yay.
Okay, so I'm going to give you a person, a leader in this world. And then I want you to give us the three skills that you think really place them in the leadership place they're in. And I gave you a list of some people I might be touching on, but I'm going to change it because of what's happening a little bit and put you on the spot. And if, you know, we can do what we need to do with it. Okay, if you were advising Donald Trump on, for those of you who can't see who are not watching this on YouTube, she is rolling her eyes. Okay, if you were, no, but let's do this seriously. You know, he may win. If you were advising him and he said, I feel my followers are slipping away. I feel like I'm not in control of the vision that I have put together that you told me about. What one thing should I change? Because you can't say something as global as you have to start telling the truth or you have to do things, because that would turn people away from him. Like, what one asset that he uses would you have him change?
I would tell him to start communicating a consistent message, meaning not wishy-washy, change his mind all the time, go back and forth, but I would say be a consistent communicator of your message.
That's really smart. And that's probably good for all of us. Okay.
It is.
All right. Biden. All right. Joe Biden, what one thing would you tell him to change to try to show people? Because people are saying, I'm not voting for Biden. I'm just voting against Trump, which, you know, they did with Hillary. I'm voting for, you know, like whatever. So what one thing do you think he could change to show his leadership capability to followers?
I would say that Biden should express a very clear, succinct vision of America, what he sees as America. Mm-hmm. I think that he hasn't really clearly done that yet.
So it's interesting, because when you started this podcast, it's really all about creating the vision first to be able to be a leader to that vision. Okay, interesting, yeah. All right, now what leader would you love to sit down to dinner with, past or present, and what would you ask them?
Eleanor Roosevelt, who you mentioned.
Really?
Yes, I would want to sit down with her, because she, first of all, broke the mold on what a first lady should do. She was the first lady that really took on a role. It was not given to her, and she's a great example for women. Not just first ladies, for any woman. She created, she had a vision. And some of it matched up with FDR, but not all of it. She actually had a bigger vision than he did. He was in crisis mode. You know, he had to handle problems. But she
was also, he also wasn't well. Which
he
also
wasn't
did.
Well, that's right. Yeah. So she had a vision, and she was a great believer in civil rights, women's rights, workers' rights. And she actually made tremendous progress for her country.
So she walked in the room on the arm of a man, but she walked out on her own.
That's right. She's a great example of, you could say, a follower who said,
that's what I'm saying. Yeah.
Yeah. I have a vision and I'm going to move forward with it.
And what question would you ask her?
I would ask her, how did she get the courage to do that? What was the catalyst? That, because that's what we all need. We need courage to take on the leadership role that we all actually could take on. It's our choice.
You know what? It's funny because I've read a lot about her, and her granddaughter gave me a tour of her wonderful place up in Westchester. That she didn't live with her husband at the end, and she didn't like her mother-in-law. So she had her own place. It looks like a camp. It's like an Adirondack camp. And Eleanor Roosevelt's the one who said, nobody can make me feel something about myself that I don't want to feel. Yeah. Because the press, you know, she was unfortunate looking, you know, physically for women at that time. Prominent women looked, you know, had a look about them that she didn't have. And then all of a sudden she said she woke up one day and she realized that all these people were making her feel terrible about herself. And that was on her, not on them, because she's allowed them in to do that. And that's what that moment in time when it changed the trajectory of what she was willing to speak up about and what she wasn't.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah. I would never have pegged Eleanor Roosevelt. I don't know what I would have thought, but anyway, good. Okay, so I'm going to roll through these a little quickly because we're running out of time, but Meryl Streep.
Well, I don't really consider her a leader. I consider I consider her more an influencer, and that she has
That's really important. That's wonderful. What is the difference?
I mean, I think an influencer is someone who shares their opinions and people embrace that and they then take it, but she's not really leading people somewhere. I don't really see what her vision is, although I kind of unconsciously do, you know, but she's never really, maybe she's expressed it on different issues, but I see her as very much an influencer that is more a supporter of a leader.
Interesting. Well, you know, certainly about women in film, probably she hasn't been, you know, some of the leaders that, you know, the Reese Witherspoon kind of leader. She hasn't been, but people follow her. You know, maybe push her to a leader. Maybe I picked her because people always say, well, Meryl says,
right,
you know, but maybe she didn't tell them she was saying that to take them somewhere. So I see the difference now. Okay, Hillary Clinton.
Hillary, definitely, I mean, she's a leader. She's been a leader actually going all the way back to when she was first lady. I mean, you think about, people didn't like that President Clinton gave her the healthcare project, right, to work on. No, why should a first lady do that, right? But you know what? She took it on, and actually, it probably helped us get to where we are today. It may have even helped us get to Obamacare, just by virtue that it was became a discussion. She also, I mean, if you think of her in Beijing, where she stood up.
Best speech of her lifetime.
That's right. That speech is still ringing today.
Women's rights are human rights.
That's right. Yeah. Exactly.
By the way, it changed the trajectory of everything. In fact, we're going to insert it here so everybody can hear a few lines of Hillary's line.
If there is one message that echoes forth from this conference, let it be that human rights are women's rights and women's rights are human rights once and for all. And among those rights are the right to speak freely and the right to be heard. Women must enjoy the rights to participate fully in the social and political lives of their countries if we want freedom and democracy to thrive and endure. It is indefensible that many women in non-governmental organizations who wish to participate in this conference have not been able to attend or have been prohibited from fully taking part. Let me be clear. Freedom means the right of people to assemble, organize, and debate openly. It means respecting the views of those who may disagree with the views of their governments. It means not taking citizens away from their loved ones and jailing them, mistreating them, or denying them their freedom or dignity because of the peaceful expression of their ideas and opinions. In my country, we recently celebrated the 75th anniversary of women's suffrage. It took 150 years after the signing of our Declaration of Independence for women to win the right to vote. It took 72 years of organized struggle before that happened on the part of many courageous women and men. It was one of America's most divisive philosophical wars, but it was a bloodless war. Suffrage was achieved without a shot being fired. But we have also been reminded in VJ Day observances last weekend of the good that comes when men and women join together to combat the forces of tyranny and to build a better world. We have seen peace prevail in most places for a half century. We have avoided another world war. But we have not solved older, deeply rooted problems that continue to diminish the potential of half the world's population. Now it is the time to act on behalf of women everywhere. If we take bold steps to better the lives of women, we will be taking bold steps to better the lives of children and families too. Families rely on mothers and wives for emotional support and care. Families rely on women for labor in the home. And increasingly everywhere, families rely on women for income needed to raise healthy children and care for other relatives. As long as discrimination and inequities remain so commonplace everywhere in the world, as long as girls and women are valued less, fed last, overworked, underpaid, not schooled, subjected to violence in and outside their homes, the potential of the human family to create a peaceful, prosperous world will not be realized. Let this conference be our and the world's call to action. Let us heed that call so we can create a world in which every woman is treated with respect and dignity. Every boy and girl is loved and cared for equally. And every family has the hope of a strong and stable future. That is the work before you. That is the work before all of us who have a vision of the world we want to see for our children and our grandchildren. The time is now. We must move beyond rhetoric. We must move beyond recognition of problems to working together to have the common efforts to build that common ground we hope to see. God's blessings on you, your work, and all who will benefit from it. Godspeed, and thank you very much.
That's a great example for sure. But let's go back to something you said earlier, because I want to be able to apply all the things you put in front of me today. And that is, do you remember when Hillary was doing the healthcare and she was attacked for, you know, why isn't she home taking care of Chelsea? Was pretty much the attack. And she said, what do you want me to do? Stay home and bake cookies?
Right.
Okay. But you said earlier that to be a good leader, you also have to be a follower and vice versa. Okay, so if maybe that's that follow moment where you said to me earlier in the podcast, you need to listen and you need to not react, but to think through your reaction. Okay, so in that moment when they're saying women are at home taking care of their families and you're out trying to change the world, hello, he would not be there without her, but we won't go there. Okay, so so in that moment, she didn't follow the tenets that you gave us in terms of be a good leader, you have to be a good listener, because she's sitting in front of a group that's being led a different path than she's going. Right. So her job would have been to become follower, to listen carefully, to try to understand that point of view, and then to not react, which is what she did, which by the way, is one of the things that sunk her 40 years later. I mean, think about it. So I think if that's what you're saying, leaders do have to decide in this moment, am I a leader or am I a follower? Do I come out swinging like Serena?
Mm-hmm.
because it's where my vision is taking me, so I'm a leader? Or do I sit back and say, I've got some people around me who are not following me and they're not toward my vision and I need to lead them in a different way? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I think that different circumstances call for different behaviors. If you use a Serena, she had to react right there or it was over. But if you go back to Hillary at that time, yes, at that time, she could have phrased it differently. She could have been more responsive as a listener to other women. However, I will say that she did learn that over the years, I believe, because I remember when she was running for Senate, the first thing she did, and maybe it was when she actually won, I can't remember, that the first thing she did was did a listening tour. And she went all around the state of New York
she did.
And she spent months listening to people and not telling them, but rather hearing what their concerns are and what would make things better for them. Mm-hmm. So I think that we can learn also. That's the thing. Most of us are terrible listeners. Doesn't mean we can't become good listeners. So I think
I agree. I'm not a great listener. I try though. Yeah. Yeah. I'm a reactor. You know, it's also my personality. And another time when we're talking, we do have to talk about how does your personality get in the way of your success? And is there more than one way to actually lead? You know, there is a forceful leader type personality. Does that work or not? But anyway, okay. Last movie that you saw.
The last movie, well, see, right away, I'd want to say RBG, but it wasn't really the last movie. I'm just obsessed.
I know.
It's the only movie I can remember.
you know what? Then you're allowed to use it. Yeah. It was a great movie, and I learned so much about how to be, not just necessarily about her history, but how to be as a person, you know.
Right. Absolutely. She is an amazing example for women and men. For human beings, you know, in so many ways.
Okay, so RBG, I mean, that's, you know, one of the, it's funny, you wanted to have lunch with Roosevelt, but RBG, clear, well, maybe it's because she's also so with us in this moment in time. What else can you tell me that we should be really thinking about right now in terms of leadership? And, you know, obviously she was one of the great leaders. What else can you share with us?
Well, you know, it's interesting. The reason I didn't want to have lunch with RBG is because we know so much about her now.
Yeah, yeah.
So much has been written about her, you know, and the thing, there's so many qualities about her that made her a great leader without attempting to get any followers, by the way. It wasn't her intention to get followers, but it just happened. And I've always been curious about, well, what is it? And what is it? And we can all learn as leaders or potential leaders. Her resilience, her persistence. She never gave up on what she believed. She, when I say resilience, think of how many times she fought off cancer. And other Supreme Court justices would have probably resigned, but not Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
She's also being criticized for not resigning and taking the risk that she did to have what happened happen. So, you know,
I know she's being criticized for that, but I don't criticize her for that. I don't either. Because we know part of what also, not only her resilience and persistence, but even her dissents, the power in her dissents actually changed laws. So it shows you that even as a leader, if you don't get what you want, there may be other ways to lead that are not so obvious. And I think leaders need to think about that. And she's a great example of that being able to be a kind person and empathetic and never want to be a star. And yet we made her into this amazing icon.
You don't think she wanted to be a star? I do.
I think she wanted to have her vision become a reality, but she did not really see herself as being a celebrity. Or anything.
Oh,
like
no.
That.
Yeah. Yeah. She was surprised by her celebrity, but yeah. I think she embraced it and loved it.
Yes. She embraced it and loved it.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
You know what else is so stands out to me is I think women, our first barrier to entry to be successful leaders, in my opinion, is self-confidence. So even if we project self-confidence, like people who meet me over the years have said, oh my God, you're a very confident person. But the truth is I wasn't. I was just playing at it. You know, I was good at that, of playing at it. I feel she had true self-confidence. So one of the reasons she was able to be so persistent when it took years to get anywhere near where she wanted to be was because she had the confidence she deserved to be there and she could get there. And so for me, the great gift from her too was be confident in your point of view and you have to wait.
Yeah, Chris, I'm so glad you said that. I 100% agree because she knew how smart she was. There was proof. So for other women, that's why one of the things in my workshops that I do with women, one of the first things I have them do is write down their list of accomplishments. And I make them keep writing them and keep writing them. And then I make them share them with each other. Because so often women don't give themselves credit for all the great things they do. In fact, we do them and we forget about them.
Or we look at what we did not get done on our
exactly.
Tuesday, you know, so, which is longer than our lifespan rather than what we did. No, it's
that's
true.
Right. So, that's I mean, I confidence is everything to get you to that vision. And so we have to do things sometimes to build that confidence up.
Well, I like to end our podcast with a to-do list. So one of the things maybe we should put on the to-do list from your podcast is to make a list of the things you've done as a leader and as a follower. How have you been a good follower? You know, and what is your vision to follow as for leading? So maybe I'm going to do that. I'm going to make that journal entry in your behalf. So, and then also I wanted to end because you brought up Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and this is something that I read that just so blew me away. So I'm gonna end with this, and you know, just thank you so much for your time today. I hope you'll come back because there's so many more things to explore, truly. This is written by her granddaughter, Clara, who's a lawyer herself, graduated from Harvard. It was exceedingly difficult for me not to pick up the phone after every constitutional law class to discuss the cases we were covering. Once, though, I had to email her about an opinion on a voting case, Evenwell versus Abbott, because I thought the strong language in her analysis did not match up with the eventual, more reserved holding. I was frustrated that she seemed to be holding back. I won't reveal her response here, except to report that she told me, "I once spoke to you, Clara, about not being the queen when one writes for the court."
Yes.
Amazing, right? And I think it sort of so puts together everything you said today. You know, yes, strident, but be able to listen. I mean, like, it is these oxymoronic things, like, I can't keep them all straight. What am I allowed to be in this second in time? But I think she puts it very succinctly there. So thank you so much for your time today.
Oh, this has been a pleasure. Great talking to you, Chris.
Always. We'll have to do it again, okay?
Yes, for sure.
Okay.